in reason to oblige friends, but this year, you see, is a leetle too hard on a fellow, a leetle too hard. The trader sighed contemplatively and poured out some more brandy. Well then, Haley, how will you trade? Said Mr. Shelby, after an uneasy interval of silence. Well, haven't you a boy or gal that you could throw in with Tom? None that I would well spare, to tell the truth. His only hard necessity makes me willing to sell it all. I don't like parting with any of my hands, that's a fact. Here the door opened, and a small quadroon boy between 4 and 5 years of age entered the room. There was something in his appearance remarkably beautiful and engaging. His black hair, fine as floss silk, hung in glossy curls about his round, dimpled face, while a pair of large dark eyes, full of fire and softness, looked out from beneath the rich long lashes as he peered curiously into the apartment. A gay robe of scarlet and yellow plaid, carefully made and neatly fitted, set off to advantage the dark and rich style of his beauty, and a certain comic air of assurance blended with bashfulness showed that he had been not unused to being petted and noticed by his master. "Halloa, Jim Crow," said Mr. Shelby, whistling and snapping a bunch of raisins toward him. "Pick that up now." The child scampered with all his little strength after the prize, while his master laughed. "Come here, Jim Crow," said he. The child came up, and the master patted the curly head and chucked him under the chin. "Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing." The boy commenced one of those wild, grotesque songs common among the Negroes, in a rich, clear voice, accompanying his singing with many comic evolutions of the hands, feet, and whole body, all in perfect time to the music. "Bravo!" said Haley, throwing him a quarter of an orange. "Now, Jim, walk like old Uncle Cujo when he has the rheumatism," said his master. Instantly, the flexible limbs of the child assumed the appearance of deformity and distortion, as with his back humped up and his master's stick in his hand. He hobbled about the room, his childish face drawn into a doleful pucker and spitting from right to left in imitation of an old man. Both gentlemen laughed uproariously. "Now, Jim," said his master, "show us how old Elder Robbins leads the psalm." The boy drew his chubby face down to a formidable length and commenced toning a psalm tune through his nose with imperturbable gravity. "Hurrah! Bravo! What a young'un," said Haley. "That chap's a case, I'll promise. Tell you what," said he, suddenly clapping his hand on Mr. Shelby's shoulder. "Fling in that chap, and I'll settle the business. I will. Come now, if that ain't doing the thing up about the rightest." At this moment the door was pushed gently open, and a young quadroon woman, apparently about 25, entered the room. There needed only a glance from the child to her to identify her as its mother. There was the same rich, full dark eyes with its long lashes, the same ripples of silky black hair. The brown of her complexion gave way on the cheek to a perceptible flush, which deepened as she saw the gaze of the strange man fixed upon her in bold and undisguised admiration. Her dress was of the neatest possible fit and set off to advantage her finely molded shape. A delicately formed hand and a trim foot and ankle were items of appearance that did not escape the quick eye of the trader, well used to run up at a glance the points of a fine female article. "Well, Eliza," said her master, as she stopped and looked hesitatingly at him. "I was looking for Harry, please, sir." And the boy bounded toward her, showing his spoils, which he had gathered in the skirt of his robe. "Well, take him away, then," said Mr. Shelby, and hastily she withdrew, carrying the child on her arm. "By Jupiter," said the trader, turning to him in admiration, "there's an article now. You might make your fortune on that gal in Orleans, any day. I've seen over 1,000 in my day paid down for gals not a bit handsomer." "I don't want to make my fortune on her," said Mr. Shelby, dryly, and seeking to turn the conversation. He uncorked a bottle of fresh wine and asked his companion's opinion of it. "Capital, sir. First chop," said the trader. Then turning and slapping his hand familiarly on Shelby's shoulder, he added, "Come, how will you trade about the gal? What shall I pay for her? What do you take?" "Mr. Haley, she is not to be sold," said Shelby. "My wife would not part with her for her weight in gold."
Aye. Women always say such things, 'cause they ain't no sort of calculation. Just show 'em how many watches, feathers, and trinkets one's weight in gold would buy, and that alters the case, I reckon."
"I tell you, Haley, this must not be spoken of. I say no, and I mean no," said Shelby, decidedly.
"Well, you'll let me have the boy, though," said the trader. "You must own, I've come down pretty handsomely for him."
"What on earth can you want with a child?" said Shelby.
"Why, I've got a friend that's going into this yere branch of business, wants to buy up handsome boys to raise for the market. Fancy articles entirely. Sell for waiters and so on to rich uns that can pay for handsome uns. It sets off one of your great places. A real handsome boy to open door, wait and tend. They fetch a good sum. And this little devil is such a comical, musical concern. He's just the article."
"I would rather not sell him," said